We're excited to change the world of startups for the better, but trying to make a difference and turning our good intentions into reality has proven to be more complicated than expected. We constantly encounter unexpected second-order effects. When we solve one issue, we end up unintentionally creating another one. It's dawning on you that being a good leader is more complex than simply having that one big idea. True leadership is about the difficult decisions and trade-offs you encounter whilst executing it. On this show, we explore the entrepreneurial zeitgeist with the aim to work and lead differently. Between all of us, we can decode what it will take to be a leader today.
Brett and I met at a B2B marketer mastermind led by Jaya Kunzu, who was a previous guest. In the mastermind, Brett was working on The Juice, and I was working on the premise of this very show, The Startup Revolution. So here we go. Today, we kick off this episode by discussing what it takes to go on vacation without your laptop. And I have to admit that I'm very guilty for not turning off my laptop during holidays this year and planning to be better at it again. So Brett McGrath is the VP of Marketing of The Juice and the host of the Modern Day Marketer podcast. In this episode, we talk about the differences between working for a small early-stage startup versus bigger companies. It's really a conversation of two marketers feeding off each other, talking about personal brands and B2B, pipeline creation, email marketing, experimentation, and building a startup brand. So let's dive in.
So this is a new revelation for me as a marketer and an individual who works in startups. I feel like over the course of my run at The Juice, 2 years into it, every vacation I took, which vacations are seldom, right? We're in nose to the grindstone, working. I have a little one. I've got another little one on the way. So I have not prioritized time off. And when I had taken time off, it always came with, all right, let me bring the laptop, make sure the notifications are going on the phone. And I would leave those trips and I wasn't energized because I didn't take enough time away. And so this last run, I said to myself, all right, I can't do it. I really need a recharge. We've been running really hard. And it was kind of just a pulling of the plug. And I've heard so many marketers that I really admire and appreciate talking about not bringing work with them on vacation. And I always thought it was good in theory, but never really tried it in practice. And I can let everyone know who's listening, you should all do it. You should all try it, because the amount of energy that I had on the other side coming back from the trip, which was great. It was great to spend time and focus on family. It was great to focus on, be in the moment, focus on those conversations. But the other benefit was coming back to work and feeling a new energy. And we just so happened to start a new quarter. And so my mind and my mindset going into that this quarter has been just remarkable. And that probably wouldn't have been that way if I would have brought work with me. So there's no like super great advice or tactical tip. It's just like the cold turkey approach. Just like, don't do it and see what happens. That's my best recommendation.
Yeah, this resonates very deeply. I'm definitely guilty of this, especially in the early days of building the agency, of always working, even resenting the idea of having to go on holidays with no laptop. I think for me, I feel the same. I think a true reset only happens if I don't open my emails, don't open my Slack, spend some days away. It's one of these things that always sound easy. Just don't bring it. And I think what's always terrifying for me is like the day when I come back and there's all these emails and all these notifications. So one thing that I notice is what I'm trying to do now is for the day that I come back, having at least the first like half day or so pretty open, no meetings, so I can go through things and look at and see what happens. Because otherwise, sometimes I find the return very stressful if I dive like head into it. But if I have like a half day to kind of like familiarize myself, read my messages, actually feel very good now.
Yeah. And maybe to add to it. So I always like to come back on a Friday from a trip. So I come back on a Friday and then you get home Friday night, chill out. Then you have like Saturday is like another vacation day, but you're at home. So then once Sunday rolls around, it's like, okay, I can organize some time around like making sure my schedule is organized for the next week and also making sure all of my priorities are laid out. And then I totally agree with you. I do the same thing. It's like that Monday back, that first Monday back, like don't schedule any meetings. Like don't go talk with a bunch of people. Like don't overbook yourself. That to me is like the focus time. And if you can dedicate that Monday to focus time, like once that Tuesday rolls around, you really hit the ground running. So I share in that no Monday meetings mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, one thing you mentioned with the Juice is that you guys are kind of like in the building phase. I saw on LinkedIn, I think Juice is 12 people. The two companies that you were at before, I think are like 9 and 26. And I'm kind of curious if you can tell us a little bit about your role, the hats that you're wearing, and then maybe also how is that different from some of the big companies like Salesforce, et cetera?
Yeah, so I've been a marketer in almost every function imaginable and every type of company from high growth to publicly traded to startup to this experience at the Juice being one that was joining the business pre-product, which I have never done. So I think just as a marketer, this experience has really allowed me to rethink the approach and also making sure that I understand deeply the motivations and desires of the people that we're trying to reach. So before I did anything, when I joined the business, instead of running marketing campaigns, getting content off the ground, like my main priority was I'm going to try to get in as many communities as possible. I'm going to meet as many marketers as possible. And I'm going to try to ask, listen first, and then marketers that I have questions about or inspire me, see if I can get 15 minutes. And those 15-minute conversations really started to give me feedback and direction on how we should communicate, how we should message, product feedback that I could deliver to our product team in Slack as we were building out our product that you see today. So I think there's many hats that we wear just working at small startups. Like I've led marketing teams, but I spent all of yesterday in HubSpot building out and developing workflows because we have an event that we're launching. So I think like my mindset is really all around, like I really believe in what we're doing. I have a ton of conviction around it. And so just because like I've led marketing teams in one area doesn't mean that I can't get down in the weeds and do things that I might have been doing 5-10 years ago in this business because it's a new opportunity. And so that's really how I see it. It's like we're all, the whole team is working cross-functionally. We're all trying to get as close to customers as we possibly can. And so it doesn't come without exhaustion. It doesn't come without rough days. But I feel like the more of those you have and the more reps and sets you have, like you hit that home run, you start winning customers, you start getting new members, and you can start replicating some of the processes. So we very much are in that early stage. I've been in the business for 2.5 years and it still feels very, very early. But, you know, with a lot of belief in what we're doing, it's been a really fun ride and experience.
My assumption is that marketing is very different in such a young company versus some of the more established companies. One thing you already mentioned that maybe here you also have a heavy focus on execution, and another one, maybe you have more of a leadership role. But I also have the feeling like the pressure on marketing in an early company might be very high, and it's also a lot more transparent because you're a small team. There's probably not that many people in marketing. What are the main differences for you?
I'll acknowledge your sentiment there. And I feel like the biggest challenge has been for us in building and developing our brand and understanding as we build this, it's like changing an engine on a plane while you're trying to fly it too, because it's like we need to grow and build this brand. We need to build trust with our audience. We need to create content that inspires. But then over here, there's like, we need to drive conversion. We need to drive pipeline. We need to drive new members on our platform. So it's like this balancing act. And my focus and direction has shifted because this is the first time I've ever worked at a business with a two-sided business where we've got, we're marketing to brands who we want to distribute their content on the Juice. And we're also trying to generate new users or free members on the platform. So my focus over the last couple quarters has shifted quite dramatically on just like the message, the market, and how we go about it. But I would say like it has been a case study for me on how to build and develop a brand and keep that ongoing while also failing a lot through experimentation and trying to drive people to do what we want them to do in order to hit our business KPIs.
And this question probably comes at no surprise, knowing what you do and what the Juice does, but Obviously, there's so much stuff out there. You're on a podcast right now. You do have a podcast, et cetera. Like, what does it take to stand out right now? Like, how do we even still get heard? And that's such a sea and flood of content creators, AI content, human creators, et cetera. Like, how do we get heard?
I think it's not easy. I always reference Scott Brinker's chart and like the different categories in marketing and how every year that's released, each logo becomes smaller and smaller because more companies are being created. And so if you just look at the category you're in and compare it to the competition, everyone's product does the same thing in most cases, same features, same functionality. So like positioning your product over another product usually doesn't resonate. And so what I think I have found that gives you the opportunity to stand out quicker than your competition is leading with your people. The more your individuals at your business are on channels like LinkedIn and are sharing their point of view consistently and sharing company messaging and not hitting people over the head with your product, but just sharing kind of your point of view on the problem that you're solving. The more you do that, the more you show up on podcasts, the more you show up on events, the more you create really good content. I feel like that all kind of spirals into this big momentum where then people start, you start to grow your audience and people start to follow your brand. So that's what I've learned from this experience at The Juice is it feels like the more I have been more front and center, the more our CEO, Jonathan, has been more front and center, the more we have been able to gain traction in the market.
Does that take convincing in the team? And if so, how do you get buy-in?
It's a great question. So early conversations, very, very early conversations, I mentioned to Jonathan, hey, I think we should do this podcast. And here are the reasons why. And also, I think regularly, you and I should host conversations on the podcast to talk about things that we are struggling with. And he agreed. I viewed it as a vehicle to meet awesome marketers. I also viewed it as a way to help streamline our content being a small team. And so for me, it was not a big battle with the CEO because fortunately he's a former marketer. So I feel like he gets the strategy and gets what we're trying to do. But I think it is the education and enablement on the existing team when you have an event or you've got a new piece of content, how you can share it with them internally and get them to not only help you share it out, but understand why you are talking with that marketer about that topic or creating that content piece that is about that topic. So it never stops. We get comments all the time. It's like, hey, I think The Juice does a good job as a company of like you all sharing your stuff publicly. And that to me is like a huge compliment because it not only helps like us extend our content, but then like I hope that if people are seeing that, it reflects on our culture and people see, you know what, they must have a good culture. Like all their team is all in and sharing their stuff. So I think it's an ongoing process and it just takes continued education. And that's to me feels like a responsibility of the marketer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. I also agree with the when I see teams that are very consistently sharing, a few brands do that well. I do think that that speaks a lot to the buy-in, the engagement of the team, et cetera. It definitely, I think, leaves a very good impression. I'm curious, I think as a marketer that, like you said, your CEO is an ex-marketer. For me, that makes a lot of sense. Also, this idea of you have to put yourself out there, et cetera. What do you say to people maybe in other functions that struggle with that a lot more and are not so drawn or destined to being a B2B influencer or a B2B creator?
It's not for everyone. And I don't think you can change people's habits or desires on being front and center. And I don't think we should waste our time doing that. Like all we can do is give everyone the tools to share and let them know the why, and people can opt in or not. So I've never felt like we need to be forceful or not. I feel like just regular updates in our company meetings and regular weekly cadences to talk about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how I could use your help has typically gone a long way. But I am, as we grow the businesses, we're trying to think about activating different voices on the team. Like, how do I take Kate, who leads our sales team, and be more front and center in order to capture the attention of the potential sales member who could be using the juice. That's something that is regularly circling around in my brain.
Yeah, I imagine. It's kind of like, let's say, the B2B influencer. Is that something that's been attractive to you for a long time, or that's something that you only started recently doing for yourself?
I think since I started at the juice, people want to buy from people. And I just look at activity of individuals on LinkedIn and what's gaining traction and what's working. And it's very rare that you see a brand have a LinkedIn page that is like dominating the conversation. It's most all the time individuals. So I think just seeing that and understanding how those people operate and trying to build connections with those people, mostly so I can learn and understand the method to the madness, has been something that I think a lot about. And I'm always trying to learn more about tips, tricks, and ways that individual creators are, you know, using their platforms to stand out and not only get attention for their personal brand, but that obviously always reflects back on the company that they work for.
Yeah, 100%. I'm curious, have you ever made any bad experience or see any downfalls of that strategy with the individual influencers, thought leaders, et cetera? Like, what if, for example, someone leaves the company? How do you handle that?
I see that all the time. And it, to me, it's like, I feel like if you're hiring a marketer and you're trying to get someone to elevate your brand, it's almost become a requirement these days to like grab a individual who is gained, who knows how to build an audience on those platforms. So I've seen plenty of creators that I admire move from company to company. And my mindset's always like, well, that new company is going to benefit from their audience that they've built. I think the one issue that I feels a little funny when I see it, it's just like, you know, what's organic and what's being sponsored or promoted. If you can feel it in the copy and you can read it and you just know that like, they're being paid or they're being asked to do that. So to me, I think there's a delineation too between those two types of promotional tactics where there's like one, an individual who's organically sharing their thoughts and sharing tips and tricks and advice, which tie back to the business that they have or that they're working for. To me, that's what resonates with me as opposed to like people that it just seems like, okay, they're being paid to share out this link. I'm just going to keep scrolling.
This actually leaves me with a practical question. I think I have, I would say, like a love-hate relationship with social media in the sense that when I first started the agency, I was doing a lot of public speaking and conferences. And then in 2020, obviously, with events falling away, I started focusing heavily on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn definitely was one of my favorite platforms. There was definitely a time where I was like, I'm learning on LinkedIn. I'm like, this is like helpful for me to be there. Recently, I find myself a bit like dry of ideas, and I'm like struggling a bit with the content machine and the grind. You know, it's been like 3 years, like several posts a week, etc. And so the question, what you just mentioned, is that mentioned a topic of organic, being authentic, openly sharing your thoughts, which leads me to the question, one, do you write all your own posts? And then two, how do we find the time to do this? Or how do we maybe help people with that? And I'm asking that abstractly, probably also for personal advice for myself.
So I, it's a good question. I do write all my own posts. It does take time, but I have, you know, doing this for 2.5 years, and I'm not a like 2 posts a day individual. I'm a, you know, 3 to maybe 4 posts a week type of marketer, just from the company I work for, the demands, everything else. It's only what I got time for. And so what I've learned and what works for me is I write a newsletter every Friday that goes out every Friday. It's Modern Day Marketer, which is a companion piece to our podcast. And I frame up the opening letter of Modern Day Marketer always, which is like kind of something I'm working on, what I'm going through that I think would benefit the people who are reading it. I try to use that as like pillar content for each next post that I'm going to create. So at least I have like a direction to point to when I'm creating a new post, as opposed to just like trying to like scratch my head and be like, what do I want to talk about today? So I always try to build my content and have there be some sort of momentum where one piece can draft off another piece and I'm constantly pulling and constantly repurposing. And so there are creators out there that are much more advanced than me at being able to do and execute this, but like starting with that pillar content and going back to it to pull has seemed to help me be more efficient when I'm posting on channels like LinkedIn.
Yeah, I try to do the same. I think what I came to realize, sometimes I'm at a point where I'm like, oh, I've already said this so often. But then I'm also noticing that obviously not everyone has seen my every blog post, my every newsletter, and it's like fine to bring it up again. But that, especially this year, I've like struggled with that. It's like, have I not said this before? But then, yeah, not acknowledging that maybe people haven't seen it.
So I worked with a CEO a couple stops ago who was just a maniacal communicator. Like, he studied communication. He was like deep in the weeds. And his message to me was always like, if it's boring to you or if it feels like you've repeated it a couple times, it's not enough. That message to me has always like resonated, where it's like, yeah, just because I feel like I've posted about this several times, probably if I look at my audience, probably like 5 to 10% have seen it. So that has helped me get over the hump on that.
Yeah. I think you're hearing my struggle. Like, it's been hard. Writing posts this summer has been hard for me. I've been a bit of a creative black hole, I have to admit, for sure. I'm kind of curious. You mentioned in the beginning, you mentioned the role of community and networking, et cetera. What communities are you part of, and which do you join for learning? Which ones do you maybe join for sales, et cetera? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah. So there's a couple that stand out to me, and one I actually have been a member of for quite some time, and they just changed to a paid model. And when it was turned to a paid model, my mentality was like, okay, this is going to lead to higher quality conversations and connections. And that's Superpath, which is for content marketers. So I just paid to be a paying member of that community. And it has been like the number one community since I've been in this role that has just been just so good at getting advice, tips, tricks, building connections. Jimmy Daly, who runs the community, is fantastic. Have a relationship with him and just really believe in what they're doing, because what they're doing is trying to elevate the position of the content marketer. And so at The Juice, we're obviously a content business. And so listening and hearing and connecting with different people there helps inspire me in the work that I do. So that would be one example. And then the other example, more on the sales side, but it's more go-to-market, would be Rev Genius, which Rev Genius is a new community that literally I became a part of over the last couple of weeks. But I think for me, it's understanding that sales conversation, how sales individuals are thinking these days. And I've always thought that the more we as marketers can understand the psychology behind sales, the better marketers we're going to be. So those are two communities that I'm currently a part of that stand out as being places where I can go to not only learn, but build really strong connections.
Yeah, I've been on the free Superpath community for a while. I got really into it, and then I found myself in 3 or 4 groups, and then I found myself too many notifications and I pulled out again. But just recently, a friend of mine actually nudged me and said, like, you should go to the paid Superpath community. So shout out to them and for doing a good job there as well. How do you organize your time and schedule, especially with some of these things that are clearly meaningful and impactful, but hard to track, hard to measure, hard to put on a quarterly report? Like, how do you divide your time and energy between some of the stuff that people call dark social, or it's simply social, and then some of the other responsibilities that you have?
It's a $1 million question, Viola. I wish I had a great answer. And I think that's the struggle for any marketer working to grow a small business. For us, we've been trying to get better at kind of attribution in terms of the brand. I think the feedback we always get at The Juice is like, man, The Juice has a good brand. I love what you're doing, love the content. But the question we get is like, how can we convert that into something that shows up in a presentation that we can then go share with our board? So there's anecdotal feedback and qualitative feedback that we can share along the way. But I think part of my goal going, we were talking before this about where you just entered a new quarter. I think part of my goal is being able to tie some of those brand activities with KPIs for our business. And one of those KPIs for our business is like new members on the platform. So it's literally free to sign up. So trying to figure out ways that I can tie in everything that I'm doing and also promote the fact that, hey, the Juice is the largest library of marketing and sales content on the planet. Like, go sign up, tell us what to think. It's like trying to infuse those conversion points on the member side in everything I do is something that I'm actively focused on and working on this quarter.
That makes sense. What did you do pre-product? Did you then build a launch, like an email list, or what was the kind of like main focus then?
Yeah, that was the, we're driving everyone to a list, and it was like, felt like, you know, kind of being a comedian at a small comedy club where you're like testing out messages and, oh, that didn't work. No one signed up here. Oh, that worked a lot. People signed up here. So it was like constantly reiterating on the message and kind of honing in on what drove people to wait on or get on that wait list. But yeah, that's what we did. And then it was like the ta-da, like we're here. Like once that finally happened, seems like ages ago at this point, but it was only 2.5 years ago, which is crazy. But yeah, but that list is a list of people that we still communicate with today.
Yeah, it's crazy to me, the importance, or not crazy, but like astonishing to me, the importance that email still plays in marketing channels. I think it's always been the kind of like undervalued, but it's been passed out as the secret marketing channel for at least the last 10 years and still holding up.
Yeah. So I grew as a marketer, or I was raised as a marketer in an email by an email company that did extremely well. And so I've always been very pro email. And it's just like all the activities we do, it's the number one conversion driver always. So I'm always very, very pro email. And I see these sentiments that email is dying or email is dead. It's just like, no, it's not. You're just doing it the wrong way. So I think email will always be around as a channel for us as marketers to communicate and to get people into the different streams that we are creating.
Do you think a lot of marketing channels got, let's say, harder? And what I mean by that is, I think email for a long time was also extremely successful because it was a pretty uncluttered space. Now, obviously, there's ads. At least I personally get a lot of spam and outreach from like lead gen agencies, guest post people, et cetera. So my inbox definitely got busier. And I mean, this is definitely true, obviously, for Facebook and Instagram, where organic reach is a lot harder. LinkedIn, I think slowly organic reach is getting a lot harder. Do you think that simply from an algorithm perspective, marketing is harder now than 10 years ago? Or is that like a misconception or an excuse?
Yeah, there's more channels. It's harder to focus, to figure out where you're going to spend your time and where your message is going to resonate. What I have found to counter that, as there are all these places to put your thing, is to always lean on the relationships. To me, the best marketing goes down in the DMs or in the emails, the one-to-one. It's, hey, marketing friend, I've got this thing I'm doing. I'd love for you to sign up. And by the way, I think your audience will value it too. And it's not like the link sharing emails we get that are just like so transactional. I'm talking about like the people that you're communicating with on a regular basis, that you're learning from, that you're commenting. Like, we should all have that bench of people that when we need to go share or promote something, we can turn to them and feel like not only will they get involved, but they'll feel good enough because they believe in what we're doing to share out with their network. So I have picked that up from a bunch of marketers that I have followed for a while. And I feel like the more I lean into that, the better traction that I get. So never lose sight of those one-to-one exchanges and interactions. It's so hard because we want to focus on quantity and get it out to as many people as possible. But I think our odds of being able to do that go up when we get a bench of people really on our team to help share and support whatever we're trying to do.
Yeah, I love that. Doing the unscalable things and also valuing the unscalable things, because I think we often talk about efficiency with everything we do and producing content, distributing content, talking with people. I think especially now with the AI stuff, part of the reason why I'm curious about also writing posts, et cetera. But I think doing the unscalable things, the human things, the personal things is a huge factor.
It takes time and some of it's not fun, but it's the stuff, especially if you're working at an early stage company and you're a marketer, that is going to allow you to understand if your thing is going to work from a broad sense. So before I ask for a share or to, you know, put it in your newsletter or whatever, I always ask for feedback. And I feel like if you get that feedback, it'll help you refine whatever you're doing moving forward.
How many people ask you for feedback? on their stuff and their product?
It's not a ton. There's probably about 5 to 10 regularly, but those are relationships that I really value. And if someone's asking me for feedback, to me, it's like, it's a compliment. And I always try to focus and spend time doing that. And those, in many cases, are the same people that I'm going to reach out to for feedback too. So it's a small network.
Yeah, I asked like 5 to 10 people, I think. People that are really committed and like putting in the time and energy to look at it properly, or asking, you know, caring about your opinion specifically. It's like, I think it's actually a lot of people.
I'll take it.
What are you guys up to next, or what are the plans? Again, we talked a little bit about this. It's like, content is busy, standing out is hard, curation is important, which is also what you guys do. It's like, what does the future hold? Like, what's coming up over the next year? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, so we're really thinking about both the member and the brand side. So it is, one, making it easier to get on the juice and to follow topics that matter to you. We have taken this position of like, you know, the B2B content space, it is a massive sea. And so on the juice, we want to help shrink that sea and make it easier for you to find the right pieces of content that will resonate for you. Well, what we learned is that, well, the juice still has a ton of content on it. So we need to make it easier for us to be able to segment what we have and make it easier for the different persona types to connect with those topics. So we just launched the ability for our members to follow topics on the juice, which has gone over super well. And we're kind of iterating and thinking more and more about how we do that. There's been conversations like anyone else about how do we incorporate AI in what we do? And it's not taking out the content and replacing it with AI-driven content, but it's just like, how do we help streamline a content piece and to be optimized for the way people consume content today? So those are some of the things that just on the consumer side that we're thinking a lot about. And then on the brand side, one thing that really energizes me and something that we have found a need on is just like content teams want to understand what's happening with our platform data and what we're doing or what's happening with different personas on the juice. So like this topic of like being able to coach our customers on like, this is the topic that resonates and this is how you should write about this topic because this is what our members are gravitating to really, really excites me. And like not a day goes by that those conversations aren't going down on Slack. So like any small company, we just got out of an all-day meeting and there was a million ideas on the board. So it's like trying to focus it down and do what we can. But we're trying to build resonance. I know we're trying to get our members to not only engage, but stay. And then also brands. We want brands to view the juice as a premium channel to get your content in front of the right people at the right time. So a lot of our product efforts are focused around that.
Yeah, I think what I like about it and all the work that you're doing in communicating is I think our like collective marketing mind is shifting to another stage. I think in the early days of the internet, it was a lot of like, obviously like websites and blogs and content creation. And then social media was a lot of content creation. And then over the last few years, we're talking a lot about distribution, repurposing. And I think now, especially over the last few years, also talking about where we're at mentally and psychologically, I think we're all like, oh my God, there's so much content. Like, I think the general sentiment towards the internet is not anymore like, it's an exciting Wild West. I can create a weird thing. It's more like, oh my God, there's so much stuff. And so that idea of like bringing it all back together and streamlining it, not just in B2B, but in general, is so timely right now.
Yeah, I just think about mirroring it with my consumer life, right? The streaming of music, when I open up Apple Music, right? It knows what I like. So it helps make those recommendations. And that goes across the board with the Netflix and the way we shop and everything else. So I think the more we can mirror some of those consumer experiences that we have when we're outside of work into professional content and not feel like we're on content overload. Because like you said, there's so much content out there and oftentimes we don't even know how to navigate it. Like we want to be the place that makes that easier for B2B marketing and sales professionals.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Do you have any final words of wisdom that you want to share or kind of like learnings from your marketing career that you didn't get to touch up on yet that you wanted to bring to the conversation today?
Yeah, I would just say like most marketers are super ambitious and we want to win and we want to ship and we want to keep going. One piece of advice that I would have for anyone out there listening is just like, take a step back sometime. Take a step back and evaluate your work and evaluate what you're doing. Also, make sure that you are taking care of yourself. We are in this era right now where most of us are working from home. We're alone. Our interactions that we have are through, you know, Zoom calls and through Slack interactions. And that can weigh, especially on our mental health. So make sure you build in habits to go outside for a walk, work on creative projects, kind of pull yourself out of the day-to-day grind. And I know it's challenging, but I feel like the more that we can dedicate time to looking out for our mental health, like the better marketers that we will be.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. And it actually perfectly closes the loop to this idea of like taking a few days off with the holidays as well. I agree with that. I think the last few years for me were very laptop focused, very hustle focused. And now I'm trying to step away and like literally look out and, you know, appreciate the outside world again. And I can only testify to that also, giving a different creativity and inspiration. So thank you for bringing this up. Where can people follow you, both the Juice and yourself? Where do you prefer people to check you out?
For sure. So I would recommend, if you're listening to this conversation, and you want to check out the Juice, you can join app.thejuicehq.com. It's free to sign up. Go check it out. Follow some topics. Follow some brands. Would love your feedback. You can reach me, Brett McGrath, on LinkedIn, at Indy McGrath, on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days. But I would love to connect with you, and I'd love for you to jump into the Juice and check it out.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Brett.
Thanks, Viola.